Hello and welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. And of course, Josh is your host on this gorgeous Friday afternoon. How you doing?
Good.
What's up?
Well, I got a few guests. Susan Kelly will be our first guest from generousgardeners.org, talking about some of the good work her organization is doing to harvest gardens around Gloucester, and some of the projects she's working on to help do that. They also do a tour out at Eastern Point and expanded during the summer. And then we have Estelle Rand, a city councilor in Beverly, who we had on back when we were doing the election, and she's going to tell us about some of the things that are going on in Beverly. And then Joe Cialino is going to talk to us about the budget process in Gloucester and what's happening now.
Sounds good. All of that coming right up.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan, and today I'd like to speak to you about the North Shore Student Athlete Program. Sponsored by Moynihan Lumber in conjunction with the Salem News, the Daily Item, the Newburyport Daily News, and the Gloucester Times. The program, now in its 24th year, celebrates high school students who excel not just on the playing field, but in the classroom as well. Male and female winners are chosen each month. All student athletes must be nominated by their coaches. Nominations for the program are made via email to nsstudentathlete@gmail.com. Youngsters who are nominated must have a B average or better. Monthly winners are then eligible to be selected as Student Athletes of the Year. Yearly winners and their families are recognized at a luncheon at the Salem Country Club held in early June. Please remember, all youngsters playing a varsity sport at any high school on the North Shore, public, private, or parochial, are eligible.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Susan Kelly. Susan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh.
Well, we usually start out and tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'd like to talk, you know, your career, your background, and so forth, and then talk about Generous Gardeners and all of the good things you folks are doing.
Okay. My name is Susan Kelly. I've lived in Gloucester, Massachusetts with my husband Chuck and our two children for 20 years now. I'm originally from Ohio. I grew up on a farm in Ohio and moved to Boston to go to Harvard for my undergrad and then went to Boston College Law School. And I am the president of a technology company in Saugus called MicroSearch Corporation, but my face in Gloucester is more Generous Gardeners, which is a nonprofit I started to help beautify Gloucester with flowers.
Good. Great. Tell us a little bit about the company that you're president of.
MicroSearch? Yes, my real job is a company called MicroSearch Corporation. We're in Saugus, Massachusetts. It's a small company, but we've been building document databases for 20 years. We had a search engine in the cloud before Google existed, so needless to say, I could have done better. But we stayed small, and we basically create these websites for clients of very content-rich data, a lot of collective bargaining agreements. We work with all of the major, most of the major labor unions, and I have almost every teacher contract in the country in my databases. So that's kind of my niche. We have a new product called Video Search, where we can incorporate videos into your document databases and make them searchable by, you know, associating a timed transcript of with the spoken text, and it's pretty cool. We just did Joey from Good Morning Gloucester's YouTube channel. So if you want to check out gmg.videosearchsite.com, you can get a sense of what we can do.
Great. So you got involved with gardening where and how? Tell us about your organization and what you're doing now and what your plans are for the future.
Okay, well, Generous Gardeners was started 5 years ago by me and my gardening mentor and good friend, Therese O'Connell, and the original idea was to create a plant-swapping website where people could donate or sell their plants online. We kind of thought of it like a Craigslist for plants. That actually tanked. Nobody posted anything, so it never got any sort of traction, much to, you know, our surprise. We actually thought it was a really good idea. It's still there at generousgardeners.org, but very few people have posted plants on it. So we kind of, in the process of promoting the site, we became very active in donated plants, and we ran our first plant sale to benefit the Gloucester Education Foundation 5 years ago. I'm very proud of that, because 5 years ago we had, you know, we raised $2,000, gave it to the Gloucester Education Foundation. They used that to provide direct grants to teachers in the middle school, and it just has steamrolled, and now they have a full aquaponic system, they've built butterfly beds, they have, it's really cool to see how, you know, two women with some donated plants can, you know, really spark a lot of interest in gardening. So we're actually having our fifth annual plant sale May 21st. It will be at the Fuller School. And there are lots of amazing deals. Anybody who has come to our plant sales in the past know that, you know, the plants go for, you know, $2, $3, and $4 for really nice perennials that you would be paying, you know, $15, $20 for at a garden center. These are all donated plants, so they, you know, have been in Gloucester their whole life, and they, or most of their life, and they will do well. And they're typically salt tolerant, wind tolerant, and hardy specimens.
Great. And so some of the other activities that your organization is involved in.
Okay, so we have three prongs of Generous Gardeners. The main one is volunteer gardening in town, where we take care of many of the spaces behind the police station. We've taken over the Harbor Walk. We're going to be taking care of the library. We planted at the American Legion. My favorite garden right now is the median strip in front of on Washington Street as you enter Gloucester, by Friendly's there. And in fact, we just cleaned up the ancillary bed next to that this morning, and we'll be planting some stunning flowers in there too. But that's kind of the main core, is volunteer gardening. Then we have the plant sale for Gloucester Education Foundation, and the other big thing is our garden tour, these are self-guided tours of private gardens. This year, we have the exclusive Eastern Point, which is going to be fabulous. We have some estate gardens where, you know, big gates, you know, hide these amazing gardens, and I think people will really, really enjoy it. It's $30 a person, and it will be on July 9th, Saturday, July 9th, from 10 to 4. You can purchase your tickets online in advance if you want at www.gloucestergardentour.org, or the day of, you can just come to St. Anthony's by the Sea, which is the church right near Eastern Point. It's 2 St. Louis Avenue, is where we will be, you know, selling tickets there. And then the third big thing we're doing is this major initiative as part of the seawall reconstruction project to install gardens on the east, on the Western Ave side of Stacy Boulevard. And you saw those plans when I spoke at the Rotary Club. But basically, there are going to be 13,000 flowers, perennials, annuals, and bulbs, planted in beds that complement the Fisherman Wives Plaza. Ann Johnson, who is one of my very active volunteers, is a landscape architect. And when we were approached by the DPW in 2015 to help them plan something, she took her landscape tools out of retirement and put together three plans, and this is the one that was chosen unanimously by the Fisherman Wives, the Mayor's Office, and the DPW. So I think if you are interested in seeing the plans, go to www.generousgardeners.org. Everything's posted online. You can also donate. We have this amazing sponsorship capability where you can sponsor a plant tag, which these are botanical plant tags. They're very attractive. Like 4-inch by 3-inch tags that will state the Latin name, the common name, the sponsor name, and there's a QR code associated that visitors can put their smartphones on and go to a website where they can learn more about the plant. We think that people will love this because it'll be like a botanical garden that they can say, oh, I want that for my garden, and they can, you know, go and see what that plant is. It's only $250 to sponsor 20 to 25 plants and a plant tag. So we're hoping that businesses and individuals, they can say in memory of or sponsored by or, anything they want. They have one line on the tag for their sponsorship information.
Great, great. And when is that being phased? I mean, when do you expect to raise the money, do the plantings, and that kind of thing?
Okay, well, that's a fair question. So a lot of it is dependent on the seawall reconstruction project. They are doing very well. They were able to work through winter because we had such a mild winter. The expectation is that all of the beds, there's still a lot of work, conduit work and whatnot that has to be done on the boulevard before the project is done, but I have been assured that the beds will be installed. The DPW and the seawall reconstruction project is including the granite edging for the beds, the loam, and the irrigation. And Generous Gardeners is raising the money for the plants themselves. And the plan is that this fall we will plant around 5,000 bulbs, and then next spring we will plant 8,000 additional perennials and 2,000 annuals. I have actually already ordered 3,500 small seedlings that I'm going to plant on my property and give them a year to turn from a $2 plant into a $10 plant by the time they're planted next spring. We're raising money now. We have generously received $12,000 from the Dusky Foundation. Lindsay Coolidge is amazing. And we've raised another $12,000 just from small donations and plant tag sponsorships. And I am applying for Community Preservation Act funding, which will be May 10th is when I'm going to be defending my application. But we're hoping to get that. We are going to be planting the beds regardless. It's just we may have to dumb down our concept ideas in terms of exotic plants and expensive plants and go with more mundane, common ones if we don't raise enough money. But I am confident that we will.
And just to explain to the viewers, where will the flower beds be? They're on the other side of the bridge, the Gloucester
right.
side, the tavern side, or the other side of the bridge?
They're not on the tavern side. They're on the Fisherman Wives Memorial
right,
side.
Okay.
So it will go from the cut bridge to the bocce courts.
And then they will, so how far back from the seawall will they be?
Well, there'll be a walking path, as there is now, and there's new lighting going in that Ann has been working with the engineers, and they've been wonderfully accommodating because, you know, one time one light pole was spec'd to be in the middle of a path and things like that. So we've been working closely with the engineers there, and things have been scooted around to for manhole covers and things like that, but it will be set back. There will still be paths on either side for walking.
Great. And that'll go the whole length of the boulevard right down to where the tennis courts are?
It goes, there will be one bed around where the Anchor Memorial is there,
yeah.
And then the path is going to be straightened toward the War Memorial, and then there are five total beds. They're approximately 70 feet by 30 feet, and they have the same structure as the Fisherman Wives with the kind of center point, which will be around the existing urns, and then the beds are in the shape of that the four beds around the circle in the center. Again, if you want to see the plans, they are online at generousgardeners.org.
And if people want to join your organization, how would they go about doing that?
There's no cost. We're all volunteers. We are Generous Gardeners, and you see us around town in our bright green aprons. But if you just email me, susan@generousgardeners.org, I will put you on my weekly email blast where we say where we're going to be and what we're going to be doing. Tonight, we are going to be from 4 to 6 at the Gus Foot Park, which we've been cleaning up for the past couple of weeks. It really had been neglected, and it needs a lot of work. You can also see, I met with the DPW this morning. They're cleaning out behind the police station on the left-hand side for us, and that will be a major project that we'll be putting in over the next 2 or 3 weeks.
And what? How many people typically show up for your volunteer outings?
Well, I send my email to 155 people every week, and pretty much the same 10 to 15 people show up to actually garden. But we do get people who, you know, sometimes, you know, especially when I have emergencies, like, oh my gosh, we have to get this in. We have some, you know, great, you know, all of a sudden, many more people. We've had, I think, 35 people came when we planted the tulip bulbs at the Fisherman Wives, and when I had the emergency that we needed, they were putting up the fencing because it was all voided under the Fisherman Wives, and we needed to get all the plants out of there. Again, we had a good 20 people show up to help dig up all the plants that then we planted at the American Legion.
How many traffic islands are there, and how many of them do you maintain, or if to the extent that you know that?
Traffic islands?
Yeah.
Well, there are many, many, many traffic islands in Gloucester. We are maintaining the ones in front of Tally's, the one by the rum line. We just cleaned up the one, and again, the biggest one is the one, the entrance into Washington Street by Friendly's there. That's my favorite. And then, yeah, that's it for traffic islands that we're doing right now.
And are there other, if somebody had a project that they wanted done, to clean up or to put a flower bed in, or
let me know. We have lots of city spaces. If you would like to adopt an area, we can assign you an area to take care of.
Right.
Absolutely.
And if someone raises stuff in their backyard, or they grow, you know, I know that people have vegetable gardens, and they give that to the food pantry and so forth, but if people raised flowers or
flowers, absolutely. Well, first of all, I just want to say for the Gloucester Education Foundation plant sale on the 21st, we accept all plant donations, and then the donor will receive a tax deduction for the value of what we sell those plants for. And Gloucester Education Foundation gets all of the money, and it goes directly into our schools. So if you are drowning in daylilies, or you have too many hosta, or too many little seedlings, we will take them, and you are doing good, and we will sell them, and you will get a tax deduction. So please, again, contact me, susan@generousgardeners.org. We'll come pick them up. If you need help digging them up, we'll come help you dig them up, and it's all for a great cause.
Great. And you mentioned that the tour that you do around Eastern Point, going from the different estates. How many estates does the tour go through? And
this year, because there's so many very large estates, we only have 10. Last year we had 15, but we were in Annisquam, and it was a walking tour and much smaller gardens. So we have 10 estate gardens that will be included on the tour this year.
Great. Well, that's super. And you had this idea to create this, was your idea?
My friend Teresa and I, yeah, it's kind of morphed. We weren't originally a nonprofit. We became a nonprofit last year. But we're just both real generous gardeners. I mean, we've been doing generous gardening, you know, for over a decade, and it just now we've kind of branded it and figured out a way to coordinate volunteers rather than, you know, just do everything ourselves. It's a very good model that, you know, it's been very effective in the city, and I think that people have really enjoyed the improvements.
How much, if at all, do other communities contact you to learn what it is you and your organization have done, and do you field calls or inquiries?
Not yet. I think that we still are just getting known in Gloucester. I haven't had anyone want to mimic our. Well, of course, remember, we're all volunteers. Not everybody is nuts enough to work as hard as we do for no money. But I do have, you know, it's really fun. It actually, I think there's a real sense of community among my volunteers. We have a good time. We work hard, but we have a really good time when we're doing it. I think you get a really good dopamine hit in your head when you're making something beautiful for the greater good.
Yeah, well, the Rotary Club, of course, has been adopted Stage 4 Park, and we put trees and bushes and gardens and all kinds of things there. It ended up being about over $250,000 that the Rotary Club put into Stage 4 Park and the bandstand.
That's awesome. So. And I know that that Steve Winslow is going for grant money, for CPA grant money, for a big project at Stage 4 as well.
Yeah, So, well, that's great. And so we got about a minute and a half left. But what is your garden like at home? What more annuals?
Well,
if anybody
wants to see, I'm actually going to do a fundraising garden party for the Boulevard Gardens on June 11th. June 11th, Saturday, from 2 to 4. I have to get it up on the website, but I've decided that since I have 3,500 seedlings arriving next week, and I have 4 acres. I have 4 landscaped acres of gardens that I use to grow plants that I put all over town. They're actually quite lovely gardens, if I don't say so myself. And I think people might be really interested in seeing the nursery beds that we have for the Boulevard Gardens. So we're basically buying $2 plants, planting them for a year, and then moving them, elsewhere. We're going to be planting 600 plants at Wellspring in June as well. And it's my property is where it kind of all comes from. So if people are interested, I will be posting that on Generous Gardeners, and all are invited. I think it's going to be $20. We'll have, beer and wine and appetizers, and it'll be a garden party from 2 to 4 on that Saturday in June.
Great. Well, thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and we certainly wish you the very best with the organization you've developed, the generousgardeners.org, and we hope maybe we can have you back later on, and you can tell us about the success of the project on the Boulevard.
I would love to. Thank you very much, Josh.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
MSO Radio, North Shore Now, news and sports. Marketing and advertising slots are now available on msonewsports.com. Banner advertising, radio commercials. We have numerous marketing and advertising opportunities on our website. Banner advertising, radio commercials in both news and sports programming. Catch on with us now. We have special spring and summer promotions. We are providing an exclusive product, radio and video features with North Shore Newsmakers. For more information, click on the advertise button on the top right-hand corner of our webpage.
After immunizing more than 2 billion children, Rotary Club members are close to wiping polio from the face of the earth. Thanks to a matching grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, every dollar Rotary raises will work twice as hard to protect children against polio forever.
Rotary is a worldwide network of community volunteers dedicated to helping people in need. Rotary believes the right group of people working together can make communities and the world a better place. Make an impact. Join a Rotary Club in Rhode Island or Massachusetts. For more, go to rotarydreams.org.
MSO Radio, North Shore Now, news and sports. Monday nights at 7, it's North Shore Sports Night, the North Shore Sports Talk Show with Rick Moore and Tim Kearns. MSONewsSports.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our guest now is Estelle Rand, who's a ward counselor from Ward 2 in the city of Beverly. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me, Josh.
Well, I know that you were on when you were running for office, and we talked about a number of things. So maybe the best thing is tell us how it's going so far as a city councilor, a second term, and what are some of the projects you're working on and affiliated with?
Great. So it's been a great second term. This is my third year as the Ward 2 city councilor, and it's been fantastic working with the Cahill administration. I think that's our mayor. He's doing a great job and has some really amazing people that to work with. He hired a lot of great people like Aaron Clausen, our planning director, Stephanie Williams, our city solicitor, and Brian Ailes, our finance director. So those are really, they're new people. They're doing great work. It's made it pretty easy to do research and dive into projects of my own. One of the things I worked closely with the mayor and our city solicitor on was establishing a human rights committee. So I also had an ad hoc committee who helped me edit and revise this ordinance that established a human rights committee. So that was passed and voted on in October by the full city council with full support. So that committee has met for the first time already, and they're kind of they're tasked with basically kind of outreach and public education on human rights issues that might be affecting Beverly citizens. So that was a really big project that took me about a year and a half to really complete. So,
and this is more of a human rights for Beverly citizens. It's not a human rights commission that talks about human rights globally. This is how the struggle for human rights as echoed or as impacted by citizens of Beverly.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, they're not global issues, though, you know, I'm sure there are many communities deal with similar things. But, yeah, it's really meant to be a group of people that can really look at any group in Beverly that's being marginalized. And, I mean, the goal is not to, like, you know, cast judgment on citizens, but the goal is just to help by help Beverly become a more inclusive community through public education and basically telling stories. You know, like, I think one of the things, especially in the political climate of today, that's really important is for all of us to listen to the stories of our neighbors and our community, just to know each other better. And the Human Rights Committee is really going to help with that.
Great. And some of the groups that you talked about, that people who may be marginalized, would extend in what areas that you envision or maybe that the commission is posturing to understand?
Yeah, I think a really good example are, like, youth, especially kind of like older youth, like kids who have graduated from high school, but youth and adults with developmental disabilities. We have, like, a number of group homes and day programs in Beverly, but I really feel like, you know, the people who live in our group homes for developmentally disabled are, they live here, but I'm not sure that we're fully integrating as a community. Like, there's kind of an invisible barrier between those group homes and the rest of us. So I'd like to see those barriers really diminished, you know.
Great. Now, what some of the other things you're working on? I know it's budget season. Any thoughts you want to share with us on that?
Yeah, budget season is an exciting time. It's really an opportunity for me as a city councilor to ask a lot of questions about where we're spending money and why. And in Beverly, I think it's pretty typical of a lot of cities and towns in this area where about 50% of the budget goes to our school system. So, you know, it doesn't seem like there are a lot of changes to the budget coming our way this season, but I really see it as an opportunity to ask a lot of questions. One of the things that I'd be interested in seeing on our budget that would have a really positive impact would be to see a line item that deals with specifically with, like, pedestrian safety improvements. So we have a line item for sidewalks, which is actually very, very small, and we have a line item for road work, which has been increased under the Cahill administration, but it's been really challenging for me as the councilor who represents the downtown to try and get kind of heightened attention on our sidewalks downtown so that people with, you know, so that it's safe for people to walk. But, I mean, when you really think about, you know, how we want to be a place where visitors can come and feel safe and comfortable, and we want to encourage people to walk and get around downtown without their cars. So right now our sidewalks downtown are, you know, they're dangerous for the elderly. They're not totally safe for anyone who's using a walker or a wheelchair or a cane or a stroller, you know. So I'd like to see, probably not this year, but next year, I'd like to see if I can push for some kind of line item that really addresses, put money aside just for those kinds of improvements.
Great. So among the other things that are going on, I know you mentioned schools. There's effort for, you're going to be building a new middle school. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, if you know Beverly a little bit, the old Memorial School has been completely demolished. It is no longer on site. You cannot even see the remnants of it anymore.
That's down by the old Dairy Queen.
Yep.
That
exactly,
area.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, up on Cabot Street. So, so the construction company is starting to test for where they're going to put their, for pile driving. So they're really close to, you're going to start to see construction really soon, like in the next probably 3 weeks. You're going to start to see frame pile driving and framework going up. So the new middle school project is, so far it's totally on track with its timeline and budget and things like that. And the school building committee meets and really gets into the details of it now. Like, they just decided what they're going to do for indoor storage for the students. They're not calling them lockers anymore, but
indoor
kind
storage.
Of like small little cubbies that have locks. So they're getting into the details now, which is a really good sign that we're on track, and the school should be finished for fall 2018.
So. Now, you also have a lot of construction going on in the Rantoul Street area. How is that impacting what happens in Beverly in terms of traffic flow or other things?
Yeah, it's been pretty exciting. All of Rantoul Street, actually, from the memorial, the old memorial building, to the Salem-Beverly Bridge, so it's technically Route 1A in Rantoul Street. That is all going to be reconstructed within the next year and a half, it'll probably take. So you'll see real construction, like completely ripping out the road by the bridge starting from July, full on July and August, I think it is, from the bridge to like the post office will be completely ripped up, and you'll see it sooner in June at the north end of Rantoul Street, down by the railroad station, actually, again, kind of near the Dairy Queen up there.
Sure, okay.
And Balt Street.
Now,
it's really exciting, actually, that the whole road is going to be redone and totally beautiful, and it will be really challenging for Rantoul Street businesses, so I'm always encouraging people to, whenever they can, just to kind of keep them in your minds, despite the dust.
Okay. So. And what beyond the road construction, what's happening in terms of development, infrastructure development, or development bringing in businesses, or even development along the waterfront? What anything that you can report in on that?
Yeah, the waterfront's been pretty quiet. Our planning department is reworking the request for proposals for a lease down there. So I haven't heard with what's going to be. I haven't seen the latest copy of that or what's new about it. So, but actually, the city council just voted just this past week to give a TIF to a new company called High Res that's going to be going in on Cherry Hill. And I think the right term might be like a biotechnical company. They actually make these robotic systems that are used in experiments and medical research. So they're going to be bringing another 50 jobs, high-paying technical jobs for bioengineering and things like that. So that's a really exciting addition and a great employer to have here with us in Beverly. So I'm excited that we were able to attract that company and help them relocate here to Beverly. So I think they're building the building that they're gonna be housed in, and so I think they won't be here until fall or a little bit later, but they're on their way, which is very exciting.
We have a few minutes left. Tell us, I know that you've been involved with the cultural district and so forth. Maybe you could share a few thoughts on that.
Yeah, this is, I think, really, this is the kind of thing that's really helping create an identity for Beverly. Is we've been designated, we have a designated arts and culture district now, and it goes from the 301 Cabot Gallery, Montserrat Gallery, to the Beverly Historic Society, and that's all on Cabot Street. And so, really, we have great anchors of Montserrat College of Art, and also the Cabot Theater have been really great at just keeping up, pumping cultural programming into the community. And what I find really exciting is on a Friday night, you might have a gallery opening at the 301 Gallery and a great concert at the Cabot, and then also the Larkham Theater, which is actually for sale right now, but the Larkham Theater will have a concert too, and you'll just see people streaming down Cabot Street, going to restaurants, and they're here for our culture and art, which I just think is wonderful. So I think it's a great way for Beverly to grow and attract people, attract visitors, and attract artists to be here, and the key is just keeping enough affordable housing to keep the artists here, you know?
Sure. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest again on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Wish you the very best in all of these endeavors that you're working on with the mayor of Beverly and your fellow city councilors. And perhaps in the fall we can have you back and you can give us a kind of a report card update on how these things are going.
That'd be great.
Thank you, Estelle.
Thanks for having me.
MSO Radio is where you can hear North Shore news and sports newsmakers, such as new Newburyport High School football coach Mike Levine.
So the first thing for me is going to be to incorporate a lot of the wonderful guys that worked here last year with Coach Gaudiano, along with any new staff members that we bring on, and make sure that I have a staff that kids feel comfortable with, that I feel comfortable with, and I'm sure we'll end up with some excellent football coaches, and together we'll put this team where it needs to be.
Good luck to Newburyport head football coach Mike Levine. This is MSONewsSports.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our guest is a familiar guest, actually, City Council President from the Gloucester City Council, Joe Schillino. Joe, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Josh, for having me once again. It's always fun having an interesting chat with you.
Well, you know, I know there's a lot of busy things happening in Gloucester, and the budget process is on you folks, and I also know that you have a you're a veteran city councilor with a lot of folks on the city council who are in their first term. So I know you've had to kind of orchestrate committees and to get people working on all the standing committees and all the special projects. How's that going? And as we get into budget, as we're into budget season, what do you first see that taking shape as?
As the training of the new city councils, I know that they have received more training than any other council before them, you know, whether before they got sworn in and after they sworn in. And now I'm kind of seeing the results of the work that we put in, where, you know, the new councils really ask good questions. They're familiar with the terminology, the understanding of the system, and who the players are, and I think it's all paid off. I think we have a good working council that is ready to roll out their sleeves and to right, the first thing we have on the agenda is to pass the budget for the city of Gloucester, which is around $110 million, which was $110 million, and so it's a big responsibility, and that's what it's up to run the city of Gloucester. And we have, on budget and finance, we have two new counselors, besides myself, and that's Counselor Dr. Orlando and Councilor Scott Menhart. Scott is the chair of Budget and Finance, and Joe is the vice chair. And so we have new people, and they've taken to it very, very quickly. I'm very proud of them.
Good. And what it used to be 90 days, then 120 days after the election of the governance, the chief executive officer was to present a budget to the city council or the alderman, depending if it was a city or town. We're coming up on that now, I guess, or pretty close to that. How is the budget in your hands now as a council? Or
last Tuesday, the mayor handed over the budget to the city council. So now it's the city council's budget. And we have scheduled around 12 meetings where we go through different sections of the budget and basically line item and line item. And what we have happen is that we have a representative from the administration plus whoever the department head, and they have to defend their budget. And we ask them questions of why you requested this, and could you do for less, and go through that process. So that's where we're in right now. We've done that. We're in. We just did something called the Enterprise Fund, which are like little companies built into the system, and we had our first meeting. So it's coming along. It's a very tedious and drawn out process, but in the end, it's worth. And what we have is we're trying to find some spare money where we can do other things that have been cut, and trying to make it work. And also, in all of this, you have the school department budget, which is presented to the city council also, and we have to go through that. That budget is a little bit different than the city's budget, where if we wanted to deduct something from the school department, we really can't. Only the mayor can do that. We can advise the mayor, but the mayor is the one that actually has to do it.
You can add to the appropriation, but you have to.
But we cannot. Reduce, which we can do with the city side of the budget.
But you could reject the mayor's budget for schools, in theory, even though you may not actually do that.
Right. So it's a work in progress, and I think the school department got for their. It worked out with the mayor, the figure at the permit that'll stand. It's always a little bit of tweaking here and there. And we're starting to go through, like I say, the city side, which is, where the chunk of the money is. And one of the things that, a lot of people don't understand about our budget is that the majority of the budget is salaries. And probably a good 70% are salaries, which are contractual, so there's not a lot of wiggle room on that part of it. But on the ordinary expenses, then you can try to do something with that. Yeah.
Councilor Cellino, it's Rick Moore. How you doing?
Hi.
Listen, how's business going with the sun finally out now?
Finally, we're starting to see a little daylight, literally, and with customers, we're starting to get visitors again downtown.
It's been brutal. Listen, I have a question. I saw something in the paper the other day, and one never knows whether the quotes are accurate or not. I know Ray Lamont and the guys try to do a great job over there, and they do. But the projected income now from the increases for the beach parking, how realistic is that, Joe? And can you explain that to Gloucester residents as to what's expected from the new prices in the parking lots?
The new prices of the parking lot are only going to affect the visitors. It's not going to affect any of the Gloucester people. Now that figure, I think, is projected to be around $360,000. Now, when we talk about revenues, for the city, it's like looking into a crystal ball.
Mm-hmm.
There are no guarantees when it comes to revenues. Now, if you look at the beach revenues, every year we try to lowball it, and the reason we lowball it is because it could be a rainy summer, and so you're not going to have the huge revenues like you would have if it was a sunny. So the $360,000 has really not been budgeted into this year's budget, because you really don't know if that money is actually going to materialize.
No, okay, well that is reassuring.
Yeah, so that's how it works, and it's the same thing we know when you're talking about building permits, you know, and the revenues from that. Well, you don't know. Hopefully, the economy's doing well and people are building, so people are taking out building permits, and whether it be excise tax when it comes to cars, are people buying new cars? So you have to be optimistic, and you have to really work on the low end of it. And if you're pleasantly surprised at the end that you know that there is money in the account, you know you can transfer it out, or it'll fall to free cash, which you know would be utilized in another manner.
That's great, Joe. Thanks for the explanation. I feel a whole lot better now.
Okay.
I know 20 years plus ago when we did the school department took over the beach concessions, it was, you know, we did it. We made an effort. We made $30,000-$40,000 of revenue, and that helped pick up things. But it was a big difference between a 90-degree day and every other day. If you had two or three days and it was 90 degrees, you know, the concessions would bring you gross $45,000 but it would slide off. And I assume the parking is the same way.
Same way.
70 degrees and what Don Kent used to call a polar air front in the water, you know, you're not bringing them all down from every point south, and you're not going to have the same level of revenue. Conversely, if you have a rainy summer, it really cuts into what you can do. So it's all weather driven.
Well, it's all weather driven, and when we're doing the budget, we always have to go on the conservative side when we have these figures, so, you know, especially on revenues, because you know you have to say, well, what if these revenues don't come in?
Well, yeah, I mean, and it creates a double hit if you overestimate your revenue, and then you plot an expense line against that, and the revenue doesn't come up. You have to cut twice as much,
right?
To make that, and the further you are in the year when you realize that, the bigger that cut gets.
Right. Good financial management, especially when you're doing a $110 million budget, is to be conservative and not to be overly optimistic when it comes to revenues. And you know that's what the city's done in the past, and it seems to work. You know and. And if for one reason or another it does fall to free cash, and free cash, just to explain to the viewers, it's nothing that's free about it. But what it is that it's money that's not spent, that's certified by the state, and since it's not on any line item, you can allocate it to one-time expenses. And so you can't do salaries or anything like that, but you can do projects that are just a one-time deal, and that's what the administration plus. We also put some of that money in into our stabilization fund and stabilization fund for schools. So we keep it aside and have some money that's fluid. So if we need to transfer some cash, we can. And you know, I think your viewers, should know that we don't spend every nickel, you know, that's available to us. We're always trying to put money away for our stabilization fund for a rainy day account. And I've been on the council some days, you know, some years we have had to tap into it. And then the other thing that happens, too, is that if you don't spend all the money that you get in, you use it for free cash, Moody's, you know, loves that kind of financial planning. They love for you to have a little money in the bank and have an opportunity. And what that does for us is that it gives us a lower interest rate in borrowing, and that saves us a lot of money right there also. So it's good financial management, and I think the city does a good job when it comes to that. We just got audited, and we didn't really they didn't really find anything that was problematic, and so that's a good thing.
Well, it's good, there's a lot of issues that come up in a municipality that are different than the public, the private sector. You hear so often you got to run it like a business, but the reality is, it's not the same thing. It's
same
a public
thing.
Service.
Well, finance is totally different than business finance. And when with the contracts and the automatic incentives, and there's all kinds of things that you have to deal with that you would really, really never deal in the.
And you, you as a council don't have really much say about that, do you? I mean, the labor negotiations, collective bargaining, that's vested in either the school board and the school administration or the mayor's office.
Mayor's office.
And they negotiate what goes into the contract by statute. So when the document comes to you for funding, you can vote to fund it, but you can't get into the particulars of whether they have a longevity stipend or whether they get sick time buyback or whether they get more or less sick days or personal days. None of that hits your plate in terms of what you guys get to talk about.
Right, and we sign the check that funds the contract, and when it comes to us, we have to have the funding source. Okay, you want to do races, you want to do this, you want to hire more people, okay, show us where this money's going to come from and how you're going to pay for it. So that's the role of the council, is that, to check some balance of things where, the mayor is the executive, we're legislative, but we have to balance each other off and say, and we have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that we're not spending money we don't have.
One of the good things I liked about the way the framers, the Charter Commission, when they put the government together, when they orchestrated what's now our city charter, they put the auditor under the auspice of the city council.
That's right.
And having been a practitioner many years ago in administration, that was refreshing because a lot of times in cities and particularly in towns, the finance director reports to the executive branch. So you don't have that check and balance, and there were plenty of times when I needed the city auditor to back me up because I read the law one way and somebody else may have had a different view of that, and having an auditor who understands how things work it makes it a little bit more of a balanced equation or a level playing field.
That's right. And every budget and finance meeting, the last item on the agenda is that we get accounts that are overdrawn, and he makes up the list. And so if we find that something is overdrawn, a line item, well, they have to have a transfer. Or how are you going to deal with that? And and we keep track of it that way. And the city auditor working for the mayor is certainly not a good idea. Working for the city council is in our particular form of government is the way it should be, because one of the things that when we hire a new council, a new auditor, there's been a couple since I've been in politics, I always say, are you willing to tell us the truth?
Yeah.
If it's bad, we want to know how bad it is, and whether the mayor wants to play it one way. We want to know what it is, and that's what happens. Our auditor works for the city council and gives us straight. And the auditors are under pressure too, because they have to keep things on the up and up, because we get audited, and if they start doing findings, then everybody is in hot water. So none of that in Gloucester. We really have a good team with the city clerk's office and the auditor's office for the city council, and the mayor. She has the treasurer on her side. So
years ago, there was an ordinance passed. Whenever a line item in anybody's budget is overdrawn, is the requirement of the auditor to publish something weekly and let all the department heads know. You get the sheet and you go through it and see if any of your accounts were marginalized or in the red or anything. And one day I get the thing, the printout, and it's got all the other departments in there, and the one of the accounts in the DPW was 25 cents overdrawn.
Right.
So I said to the person who was in my office, I said, let's have some fun. So I picked up the phone and I called the auditor and I said, I'm feeling really generous today, and I'm going to reach in my pocket and take out a quarter, and I'm going to put it in an envelope and set it down to you to cover that guy's deficit. And the auditor said, well, if you want to do that, that's fine, Josh. That's great. Hung up. And I said, wait and see how long before he calls me back.
Yeah.
It calls
no,
me.
You know, we get it, and like I say, it's dealt with.
Yeah.
And now, because like I say, every other week, we know exactly how the accounts are doing. And then a lot of times, it's whether it's payment for insurance or whether it's paying taxes for employment, whatever hits at the time.
Yeah.
But we run a tight ship. And we keep the books in good shape, and we know whatever the money is allocated, that's what you're.
You have to live within your means.
You got to live within your means. And
I used to do a quarterly report. You'd sit down with all of the principals and directors. Hey, this is what you said you were going to do. Where are you today? What have you done so far? And you have some expenses that are, you know, cyclical, almost like a bell curve. If you looked historically at the fuel bills, nothing in the first 3 months and nothing the last 2 months, and everything was in the middle of how it was spent.
Right.
But if you look at how spending is done by quarter, and I always put five quarters in when I did an analysis because I wanted to see how much was spent, was encumbered in the fourth quarter and not expended until after June 30th, because you wanted to have that number lower. And of course, the states changed all the rules about, you know, excess and deficiency and how that plays into state funding formulas and all of that. That wasn't the case 20 or so years ago.
Right.
But looking at it that way.
You have Moody's.
Yeah.
And we're looking at over your shoulder all the time, too. And if you don't... you don't want to lose your credit rating. Even it's like AAA, and that plays into, we have a lot of outstanding notes and any new notes that we do, and we want to keep a low interest. We've because our credit rate is so good, we've refinanced a lot of the notes, and that saves us a tremendous amount of money.
Got maybe a minute or two left. What do you see on the horizon in terms of infrastructure, capital outlay, or the capital improvements program? Will there be a capital budget this year, and how significant do you anticipate that being?
Well, we're working on it, and we're getting a lot of it now into the budget, where somebody, the DPW is looking for a new truck, so whatever they need. But our big infrastructure right now is we're going to do the center of town, and we're going to reline the water mains. And because a lot of people have been complaining about brown water, so now the only way to, it's just they're just rusty. So what they have is they have a process where it's like a roto-rooter where they root them out and they coat them with cement. But you don't have to dig up all the streets. So that's a $2.2 million infrastructure fix that we're doing, and we'll be going out to borrowing for that. But at this point in time, that's really the biggest thing that's come down the pike.
Great.
That we've been dealing with. The other thing we're going to be doing too is that we're combing through this year's budget to find out if there's any monies that weren't spent that we can put towards the fire, snow and ice, in order to, to get that cleaned up for this year also.
Great.
And so that's a way of you can only budget so much, and now we have to come up with the rest of it. Whether some accounts we only have another couple of months within the year, so we can find a little money here and there, then it adds up.
Well, hopefully we won't have to use any of the snow and ice money.
Oh, hopefully it's capped and it's done, and we won't have to the sanders out anymore.
Right. Well, thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and wish you the very best of success as you navigate through the $110 million budget process.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Joe.
Bye.
Well, it's Mother's Day weekend. Big meal coming up.
A lot of stuff happening in our house this week, so yeah.
All right. How about future guests?
Sherry DiLorenzo Zinnick will be a guest next week, talking about the cruise port and the new motel and things that she's affiliated with here in Gloucester. Second guest will be Ed O'Reilly, who's a former Gloucester City Councilor and chairman of the Gloucester School Committee. He's and he was once a candidate for U.S. Senate against Kerry, and he's running as a one of many candidates running for sheriff of Essex County. So we'll be talking to him, and we should have a few other guests, or at least one other guest next week.
Okay, sounds good. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Take care. Right, that's Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. Do have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
This is MSO Radio at msonewsports.com.